Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
All right, you're welcome along. It is Thursday's football show. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock. It is Spurs 0, Liverpool 1 at halftime in tonight's Premier League game. Liverpool finally getting a goal in the Premier League, but they had to wait until right at the end of a really good first half when Roberto Firmino tapped in from close range after Sadio Mane got in behind the Spurs defence. Mane missed an absolute sitter in the first couple of minutes of the game. Straight after that, Heung-min Son had the ball in the back of the Liverpool net, but VAR intervened. One of those incredibly tight offside decisions in the build-up. Son was coming back from an offside position and his heel was offside, so a let off for Liverpool, but Liverpool have really kicked on from there. They've created a lot of chances, but just the one goal so far. Technically, it's been as good as you'll get from a Premier League game, but still just the one goal in it. Live Premier League commentary back and off the ball this Sunday. Liverpool amongst them against West Ham from 4:30 with Stephen Doyle and Vinnie Perth. Myself and Brian Kerr will bring you Leeds and Leicester from 2:00. So the second half just about to get underway. Mark Lawrenson's watching that, so he's going to check in with us about 9:30. 53106, the text number if you want to get in touch, particularly if you are a Manchester United supporter and you were watching and have thoughts on last night's performance against Sheffield United as they were beaten by 2-1. Their long unbeaten streak coming to an end. To chat about that, I'm joined by Andy Mitten of United Will Stand. Good evening, Andy.
Good evening.
What went wrong?
What went right? Unless you're a Sheffield United fan, it was an awful night for Manchester United, playing against a team right at the bottom, a team who'd scored twice against Manchester United at Bramall Lane in December. So it showed that Manchester United can be a bit vulnerable against Sheffield United, and they didn't play well. They couldn't break them down. They had a game plan, defended very deeply. And it came off, and the two goals were both poor, which the home team conceded. And these results happen in football in a silly way. It's probably why we love football, that you know it's not going to be Bayern Munich just winning the league every single year, or Paris Saint-Germain like it is in France, that you get these results tripping up. And I think Manchester United fans have taken quite a bit of joy in recent weeks watching other rivals trip up. West Brom go to Anfield and get a late equaliser. Burnley win at Anfield. Okay, it's not been happening so much to Manchester City. They look pretty ominous at the moment. But lots of the rivals have dropped points. Manchester United have had a better run than all of them. And that's meant that Solskjaer's team has gone to the top of the table. But it was a shocking result. Now, if it's in isolation, okay, football teams lose matches. Even the best teams, even the treble winners, all of them, they've lost lots of matches. Manchester United just need to get over it quickly. There's a difficult game. Arsenal away at the weekend. Before that Sheffield United result, Arsenal were actually the last team to defeat Solskjaer's side. They won at Old Trafford at the end of September. So it's been a really good run. And the team is still in a very good position. And fans were still on a high after knocking Liverpool out of the FA Cup on Sunday. But that was a really bad result.
John Giles was on earlier and he felt it was an attitude issue last night, that for great teams, relentless teams, that they look at the Liverpool game almost as the easy game because you know you're up for that one. It's Liverpool, an FA Cup game. You're easily motivated for that. But actually, it's harder then for Sheffield United to get yourself up, and that's what title-winning teams generally have. They have that within them, that they realise we got to be as motivated, if not more motivated, for Sheffield United than we were for Liverpool, as sort of counterintuitive as that may seem.
John's in there and the biggest teams, he knows what he's talking about. The motivation for Manchester United's players comes from a huge amount of competition, that if you're not going to perform, then you're going to lose your place in the squad. I'm told that they're all training well. Results have been good, and they have been digging out late wins. They have kept going to the end against Aston Villa at home, who were a good team, against Wolves at home. They keep coming behind, coming back after going behind in matches, especially away from home. So I think you can draw some positives from that. Clearly, fans wouldn't like to see them going behind all of the time, but they've been getting those narrow wins. But the point that this isn't a vintage Manchester United side, I think that's a fair one. It's not won any trophies yet to be worthy of accolades. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has always played down this progress of his team. He said that the league table only matters at the end of the season, that his team is still a work in progress. He's consistently said that he needs 2 or 3 more players to make it a team capable of challenging for the title. The gap between United and City and Liverpool in the last 2 years was 31 and 32 points. So at the moment, the team look like they're on target for late 70s, maybe even 80 points, which is a big improvement on 66 points last year. A cup win would be a major boost, FA Cup, the Europa League. And I think that's where Manchester United are at the moment. I don't expect the team to win the league. I've not heard any fans say that they expect the team to win the league. I've seen a couple of Liverpool fans joking, saying, look at Man United fans getting carried away because they've won the league in January. Well, I've not seen one do that. There's just not that feeling that the team is on a run that's going to see them become champions. And getting to the top of the league surprised fans. It really did.
Yeah.
And I think Liverpool's form has surprised a lot of fans as well. But Solskjaer's doing a good job. There's definitely been improvements, but the team's conceded far too many goals. There's poor players in key positions. Anthony Martial is not playing well. You can't pretend otherwise. And Marcus Rashford scored a lot more goals than Martial, but he has games where he isn't producing with the consistency of the truly great players. And if you're going to win the Premier League, you've got to aspire to greatness throughout the team, because you're up against some of the best teams, players, managers in the world. So being good isn't good enough.
It's been a heck of a start to the second half at Tottenham. Liverpool scored 90 seconds into the second half to go 2-0 up. Trent Alexander-Arnold with the goal. It was a shot from over on the left-hand side from Sadio Mane that Hugo Lloris saved. And looks quite slippy, but he just pushed the ball out to Alexander-Arnold, who volleyed it in from close range. So Liverpool 2-0 up. But Spurs went straight up the other end. And Pierre-Emile Højbjerg has smashed in a cracker from 25 yards out, outside of the right boot, and flew past Alisson. So it's Spurs 1, Liverpool 2, with 5 minutes gone in the second half. It is a top quality game at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. We're talking to Andy Mitten at the moment about Manchester United last night. You mentioned Anthony Martial there, and he is one of those players whose demeanour doesn't help him when you're in this sort of form. So goals aren't happening for him. There was a real expectation after last season when he got to 17 Premier League goals that he'd arrived and he was really going to kick on now, that he was going to get a level of consistency that United could rely on. And when you are that sort of slightly sullen character from the outside, suddenly it almost looks as though your attitude is off. I'm just wondering from what you know from around United as to actually what sort of character he is and what the impression of Martial is within the club.
He doesn't speak much English. His close friends is Paul Pogba, and Pogba has had his major ups and downs, probably more than any player, but he's had a good month. I know he didn't play well last night, but he's been one of the form players, been scoring important match-winning goals, but I can't pretend that Martial's been doing well. He's not scoring enough goals. His body language, as you say, doesn't instill confidence in supporters. There's definitely a talent there, but you get these same conversations going round about him all the time. He can be spectacular, but if you're going to play up front for a team at the top of the Premier League, you've got to be scoring more goals. And last season, he did do. And if he could have pushed on and at least replicated that, then fans would be fine with it. As it happens, he's becoming a bit of a scapegoat because he has been disappointing. He's fit. He's not had to go over COVID like Paul Pogba did. And it makes you wonder, if these players were doing well, Manchester United would be genuine title contenders. And when you're telling me about Liverpool and Tottenham now, I'm listening with interest, because for the first time in 8 years, United are in a proper title race. And it's exciting. And you want your rivals to lose matches. And you put TV on and see that, oh, there's 60 minutes gone and Aston Villa are holding Manchester City. Oh, this is good. Come on, come on. And your wife says, "Why? What, who are these? What's this team? What's this Aston Villa? What that about?" And it's a good thing. Football should be like this. It should be entertaining with this title race. And it is. But Martial is one of the players who could be doing more to make Manchester United even better than they have been. He scored a hat-trick the last time Sheffield United came to Old Trafford. It was one of his best games. It was a very good performance just after lockdown. And I tweeted before the game last night, he needs something similar. He needs a big performance. And didn't come close to that. He was the worst Manchester United player. I don't doubt that he'll come good again. He's got the confidence of his manager, but you're not playing well, you're not worth your place in the side. And he's got Edinson Cavani there, who came on, and he's had a good month. Pretty slow start to his United career because of COVID, because of injuries, had his ban as well. But he's a top player, and I know that on the training ground, he's one that everyone looks up to. He also doesn't speak English, but just his professionalism, his mannerisms, his dedication. When I asked Ole Gunnar Solskjaer about him the other day, about what he brings to the team, he just replied, "How long have you got?"
Right.
And I said, "Well, I've got an hour. Clearly, he was joking, and I was as well. But he loves him. He's made a very, very good impression. He's not been prolific. United have not got a prolific goal scorer. Bruno Fernandes is a top goal scorer.
Yeah.
But the team has scored, I think, the second highest number of goals in the league. It's not a major, major concern. In general, but they're not destroying sides. They're not winning by more than two goals. They've only done that three times, I think, this season. And at the other end, I think United have conceded more goals than any team in the top 12. I think you have to go down to Leeds United to see a team who's conceded more. So you've got all these niggles and areas for improvement, and that's why Manchester United are looking at a central defender or are looking for a right-sided attacker, and some may come, some may not come. There's still players there who should have been moved on. United have got central defenders like Phil Jones, Marcus Rojo. They're just not playing. But it's difficult to move players on when they earn so much money, especially now with the economics of football during the pandemic.
Yeah, where maybe some of those options that would have always been there in Spain aren't really there for this coming summer. Just to go back to Edinson Cavani, I see he's on the cover of the latest United Will Stand, and it probably adds to the pressure on Anthony Martial that he has Cavani breathing down his neck, and because he's the new shiny player that the supporters want to see more of him. And with Tim Vickery on waxing lyrical about him earlier in the week, saying that he was the world's first box-to-box striker. He's going to be 34 in a couple of months' time. He hasn't scored a huge amount of goals, but he hasn't played a huge amount of football for Manchester United. Like, what is the plan from between now and the end of the season? Is he a genuine rival for Martial, or is minutes having to be managed? And is he going to be there again next season?
Well, I'm glad that Martial's under pressure. That's how it should be, because there's been times where you have players at United not under sufficient pressure. So when you see Luke Shaw playing really well now, it's because he knows that he'll lose his place in the team because Alex Telles can come in. Luke Shaw's been one of Manchester United's best players this season. I spoke to a lot of people about Cavani when he signed, people who know far more than I do. I spoke in detail to Diego Forlan about him, and he knows me well enough to say to me off the record what's going on, and he just said, "Trust me." Yeah, they're not close friends. I mean, they played many times together for Uruguay, but they're not best mates. He said he is fantastic. He will deliver. He will do well. He'll be like Zlatan Ibrahimovic was. And then I went to Lyon a couple of months ago, and I interviewed Lyon's manager, Rudy Garcia. And again, he's a man who knows. He's had to plot against Cavani when he was playing for PSG. And he just said, "I can't understand why they sold him." So, of course, I was glad to hear that, because he wasn't someone with a nod and a wink saying he's finished. This was someone saying he's still got it. And we're seeing that. His start's been slow and truncated, but I'm told his fitness is absolutely fine. Technically, he's not the best striker in the world, but he does everything else. And he runs and runs, and he sees things which other players do not see. He adds another dimension to the team. And I would see no reason why he couldn't play all the time. He could become the breakout star, if you like, of the season. Maybe that term is a bit incongruous, talking about someone who is 34 next month, but he is a shiny new player, and he's bringing something to the team, leading by example on and off the pitch. And even when he gave the ball away against Liverpool on Sunday, he was first back to retrieve it. But he had a really good game against Liverpool, even though he didn't score. So that's why we've put him on the cover. The strap line, give it, give it, give it, it's a bit of a joke, because one of the lads who makes daft songs up about Manchester United players decided to take the ABBA song, and he reckons he's going to start singing "Give it, give it, give it to Edinson Cavani," and it's a bit tongue in cheek. But knowing what the lad's like, I definitely wouldn't put it past him.
If only he could get
very
the chance.
Colourful character. If only he can get the chance, and I hope that he does stay and he does have the privilege of playing in front of fans at Old Trafford. And more than that, I hope that fans can get back inside Old Trafford as soon as possible.
Yeah, I thought it was more of a give it, give it, give it that you hear going around the stadium when Cavani's maybe making those runs that teams aren't, players aren't picking out. It is such a shame, when the way you're talking about Manchester United again, that supporters aren't in the stadium to see what the dynamic would have been like over the last few weeks as we're making that move. Because the way you're talking about United, it reminds me of Liverpool maybe 3 years ago and their supporters at Anfield, and the lack of trust they had in the defence before Virgil van Dijk arrived, that a sense that something was always going to go wrong, that no matter, even if they went four or five games with Dejan Lovren doing just fine, there was always this lack of trust that the stadium couldn't hide when they were under a little bit of pressure. And Old Trafford probably would have been something similar right now, as well as De Gea and Harry Maguire have done for 3-4 weeks without a mistake. It's just always there, that doubt.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I remember Liverpool's rise, and I remember sneering like many other people when they signed Van Dijk, thinking this is a ridiculous amount to pay for a Southampton defender. And I was completely wrong. And within months, Liverpool fans who are friends of mine were just saying he has been transformative, and he's the best defender in the world. And it shows how much Liverpool miss him, I think, looking at their results. And I know they've got other injuries as well, when you lose your best defender. So do you say, is Harry Maguire and Victor Lindelof, are they Ferdinand and Vidic? They're not on that level. So it's the small margins again. The best defender on the pitch when Manchester City visited a few weeks ago was Ruben Dias for Manchester City. The best midfielder was Fernandinho for Manchester City. It's tough at the top. So Ollie's talking all the time about the small margins. He wants to bring the players in. He's got to be back to get those players. Again, it's difficult because of the economics, but there are other clubs in far worse situations than Manchester United. I don't think you'll see Borussia Dortmund trying to hold out for 120 million for Jadon Sancho this summer. I don't think they'll. It's all right me saying I don't think. I've actually spoke to people today, agents who deal in the current market, and I'm forming my opinion from what they're telling me. So there's been improvements, but the team aren't ready to be champions yet. Part of me, sometimes, well, you never know. It's a strange season. Anything can happen here. Liverpool keep losing, but Manchester City worry me, I have to be honest. They've got the experience of winning. The one thing that they do tend to do is implode around the time they get knocked out of the Champions League. And I was in Lisbon when Lyon beat them. It was one of the best games of football I saw last year. Lyon blew me away with their young team. And obviously, I congratulated their manager when I met him in person a few months later. But Guardiola's a top coach. City have got players who've won the league, and they're clearly favourites.
just before we finish up, at still Liverpool 2, Tottenham 1, by the way. Liverpool had the ball in the back of the net, a sensational counter-attacking goal. Mo Salah finished it off. But again, VAR intervened, brought it all the way back to the halfway line when Roberto Firmino was scrapping away with Eric Dier and the ball popped off the hand of Roberto Firmino. It was a handball. Referee was right there, didn't spot it at the time, allowed play to continue. So the goal was scrapped and 61 minutes gone, still Spurs 1, Liverpool 2. Just to touch on the unsavoury side of football once again, and what happened after the game last night online, Manchester United came out with a statement, said they were disgusted by what they described as the mindless idiots who directed racial abuse at Anthony Martial and Axel Tuanzebe on social media after the defeat to Sheffield United. Both players, targets of racist comments, of monkey emojis. United condemned the abuse and they urged social media platforms to do more to prevent this kind of behaviour. The problem here now at this stage, Andy, is that it's not in any way surprising, and that for all the campaigns that are ongoing, for the players taking the knee before every match still in the Premier League, the online racist abuse just seems to be becoming more and more common and routine after every single Premier League match, whenever anybody makes any sort of a mistake.
Yeah. Anonymous online racist abuse of platforms who monetize. I don't think they want racism on there, but base emotions like anger, because they know they'll get a reaction. And those platforms who are becoming some of the biggest companies in the world need to do more. Nobody should suffer racism, end of. And Axel Tuanzebe, he's a great lad. His life story, and I tweeted this today, he left the Democratic Republic of Congo aged 4. His family didn't know whether to move to Paris or Rochdale. So obviously they chose Rochdale. And he was on an estate in Rochdale, and I spoke to him about it, and he said it was a great place to grow up. And he learned English. He worked hard at school. I spoke to his former head teacher only last week. He's got excellent grades at school. Captain Manchester United at every age group, right up until the first team. And his life's been a success. He's an inspiration. They don't deserve that. I think the vast majority acknowledge and appreciate what he's done and what he's doing. It doesn't matter whether he has a poor game or whether his future's at Manchester United. He may turn out to be a great defender. He may end up at Sheffield Wednesday. That's not been decided yet, but he's played Premier League football and he's done well, more so for Aston Villa. But when you see that reaction, and as you say, it's happening more and more. When I'm at the games in normal times, I'm pleased that you hear almost no racist comments. And I used to. In the 1980s, you would hear some pernicious abuse from the Stretford end. And I'm glad that that has changed. And that when you look around the crowd at Old Trafford, you see people from all countries, different creed and colour. It's not even an issue. I've organised coaches to away matches and been responsible for huge numbers of Manchester United fans. Doesn't even bother me if the person is black or come over from China or from Norway or a Pakistani who lives in Manchester. It's just not an issue.
Mm.
And Manchester's an immigrant cosmopolitan city and has been an immigrant city since the Flemish weavers came over. It's got a huge Irish population. But on social media now, you're seeing this all the time. And it's done anonymously. It's very hard, as United said in their statement, to track the perpetrators down. They can have multiple accounts. They're probably enjoying the attention that they do get. And sometimes when these people are brought down and their real identities exposed, sadly, often kids.
Mm.
But none of that makes it acceptable that players' wives are getting disgusting racist abuse in their Instagram accounts. And it's going on and on. I don't know what the answer is. I know how I educate my children and my friends, and I know what wouldn't be accepted at Manchester United games. Someone made a racist comment, they'd be dealt with. The fan base would police itself. Shrugging my shoulders. I'm not the one who's suffering from it, but it is extremely sad and concerning.
Yeah, it sure is. Andy, great to talk to you. As always, thanks for taking the time out. I don't want to upset you further, but it's Liverpool 3, Spurs 1. We have the goal, actually. Let's go very quickly to Guy Swindles and hear about it. Andy Mitten, thanks very much.
Spurs 1, Liverpool 3. Sané has finally smashed the ball into the back of the net, and after seeing Salah's goal ruled out, certainly controversially from VAR, Liverpool do have the third goal. In the end, it was a fine cross from Trent to Alexander-Arnold, and De Rodon made a bit of a mess of trying to clear his lines at the far post, had his pocket burgled by Mane, who smashed the ball home from close range. Spurs 1, Liverpool 3.
Yeah, Sadio Mane, Liverpool have really stepped up a gear in this game, and Trent Alexander-Arnold, who we were just talking about a couple of hours ago, having a massive dip in form, he scored one goal, and it was vintage Alexander-Arnold, if it can be vintage for a 21-year-old, flying down the right-hand side, and a sumptuous cross in that caused Joe Roden all sorts of problems, and it was a brilliant finish from Sadio Mane, and Liverpool do get their third goal, and midway through the second half are in total control of that match now. It is Tottenham 1, Liverpool 3. You're listening to Off the Ball, the football show on this Thursday night. What we're going to do is take a quick break and then we'll be back with Mark Lawrenson.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
All right, welcome back. Thursday's football show. Tottenham 1, Liverpool 3. 18 minutes remaining at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Liverpool went in front just before half-time. Roberto Firmino from close range. Blistering start of the second half when Trent Alexander-Arnold volleyed in from close range after a Sadio Mane shot was just pushed clear from Hugo Lloris. Spurs went straight up the other end. Pierre-Emile Højbjerg with a smasher from 25 yards outside of the right boot past Alisson. Liverpool thought they scored a sensational third goal through Mo Salah, but it was brought back through VAR for a handball. But Sadio Mane did score a third goal. Alexander-Arnold, what a pass from out on the right-hand side, and a brilliant finish to match from Sadio Mane. And Liverpool back among the gold and back to winning ways again. And maybe we will get a tight race in the Premier League. Liverpool against West Ham, live and off the ball this coming Sunday. And then Liverpool against Manchester City, live and off the ball on Sunday week. Some big games to come. Mark Lawrenson is watching this tonight. Good evening, Mark.
Nathan, you okay?
I'm all right. Is this Liverpool good with their mojo back?
Yeah, I think we saw signs, didn't we, at Old Trafford at the weekend, certainly in terms of going forward. You know, it's been an area where really they've been kind of very, very ordinary of late, but they've just got that little bit of a swagger back, haven't they, which is obviously what they've been missing for a while. So, yeah, all seems good. I think the only kind of worry would be Matip, obviously, off again. I think he's made a glass, hasn't he? The slightest knock and obviously seems to have a problem all the time. But hey, they'll deal with it. And the thing about the front three is, I mean, they basically win games on their own, don't they?
Yeah, they generally do. That follows on from Fabinho missing out on the game completely. Now, they say it's a minor enough knock, but even a minor knock, if it keeps you out for a week, means you could end up missing a couple of Premier League matches. Surely now, there's no way that Liverpool can go through the next week without signing a centre-back.
Oh, I think there is. Because I don't honestly think that the money's there, unless of course it can take somebody on loan or whatever, do some kind of deal. But of course, the problem with it is, Nathan, nowadays is you know, like what's tomorrow, Friday? You don't sort of just ring up this club and say like we'd like to take X, because these deals now take days and days to negotiate, etc., and you know everything that all and it all entails. So. I don't really see it. And with Klopp as well, he's always been, he's like, no, I'm prepared to wait for my man. He waited for Van Dijk, didn't he? So I would be very surprised.
He has waited before as well. The most obvious example is he waited for Alisson also, and yeah. Liverpool lost the Champions League final because of that. And I absolutely understand that we're in a very different world with COVID, and it's almost impossible to be critical of Liverpool's transfer policy over the last couple of years, ins and outs in the way they've done their business. But the prize money that's offered for winning the Champions League, what it would mean to the club to win the Premier League, do you not recoup that money in the medium to long term by making the investment now? Because it's hard to see Liverpool winning the league with the defence that they currently have.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think, you know, if it basically, it's obviously the Americans have got to give the say so and give the yes, and they've given him fantastic backing, and he's repaid them because nearly every player he's signed is improved, as we know. But it's who do you go and get? That's the thing, you know. Actually, who do you go and get? And you know, when they signed Van Dijk, $75 million, it looked a lot of money. It looked about $15 million more than you'd want to pay. And you look at it now, and you know your argument stands up because you could get probably double what you paid for Van Dijk if you wanted to sell him, of course, which they're not going to. But yeah, I just think I just can't see it. And when you look around as well, you know, central defenders, there is a scarcity of them, and there's certainly a massive scarcity of really top-class ones, and the really top-class ones will be absolute fortunes. And looking at them, a lot of them actually are getting on a bit, you know, the people that everybody keeps mentioning all the time. Otherwise, it constitutes a gamble.
It's an incredible game, football, when you look how quickly that your fortunes can turn. And I'm just watching Trent Alexander-Arnold ping a 60-yard ball through the air to release Mo Salah. Yeah. And he's been going through the first dip of his career under huge scrutiny and criticism, particularly after what happened at Manchester United and the way and the freedom that Marcus Rashford have. He's come back tonight. He's got himself a goal. He had a typical Alexander-Arnold assist for Mane. Yeah. And he just looked back to where he was. Like, when you think back to your playing days and when you would have had dips in form and dips in confidence, is it as simple as that? Is it simple as one match and everything returns to normal? Or actually, is there a longer lasting effect that while everything may seem fine tonight for Alexander-Arnold, it's going to take a little bit more over the next few weeks to get himself back up and running completely?
Yeah, well, I think confidence is obviously a massive thing in anything in life, let alone football. And, you know, one thing I will say about Trent is that He always tries to make the pass. You know, he's never ever been negative. He had that really poor game, didn't he, the other week? I think it was at Southampton.
Southampton, yeah, where there was the stat that he gave the ball away 38 times.
38 times, yeah. But listen, that's just the way that it is. And
well, I think the other stat was that actually Alexander-Arnold had given the ball away the second most of any player last season. So he's obviously just trying to do things maybe that other players aren't.
Yeah, no, he is. He really, and if you watch him play, it's absolutely totally. I mean, I did Burnley last week at Anfield, and his crossing was awful for him in that particular game. But you know what? Klopp will just be saying, "Look, you just keep going, because when you've got the quality that he's got, you just keep battering away at it, and eventually, it does turn round." And I mean, you know, just looking at them tonight, and say, you know, on Sunday, wasn't it, Manchester United? There's just a difference in them, and I think also Thiago makes a massive difference to them, because you know what, he looks to pass really, really quick and pass forward, I should say, and the front three obviously love that, and he makes a big difference to them. But he's a little bit made of glass as well. He's another one, but he keeps getting knocks. But hopefully he can stay fit. Look, you know, this league this year is absolutely mad. I mean, obviously, City have cruised, and they look very, very impressive. And they've got a decent run, and of course, I think, is it a week on Sunday? They play Liverpool, don't they? So, you know, that remains to be seen. But I think definitely they will be favourites at the moment. But look at Manchester United's results against Sheffield United last night. And we've just seen loads of strange results. For my sins, I do the, you know, predictions for
oh, I know, Mark.
Oh, it drives me mad. That's the first thing.
But you must be getting very well paid for that. You've been doing it about 30 years.
You are joking.
I don't know who looks into your stats for you, Mark, but I would say that is one of the most viewed pages on the BBC. Maybe not always for good reasons, Mark, but most weeks people are having a quick look to see what you're saying.
Yeah, it's fine. It's just your opinion, and I never kind of when I do it, I don't sit there with the league table and look at all the, you know, their previous scores and all that. It's just a real gut feeling. But it is good fun, but it does drive me mad. I mean, I don't know if I ever told you the story when I was first doing it. I did a game for Radio 5 BBC, and I think it was Villa. And it was like a February night. It was horrible, horrible night. And some fellow waited for me after the game outside. And he very polite, and he just, "Oh, Mr. Lawrenson," and "I'm pleased, really pleased to meet you." He said, "But I've got an issue with you." I'm thinking, "What the hell?" And there was no one else around. I thought, "Well, if he pulls a knife, this fellow, I'm in trouble." And he said, "Yeah, it's about your predictions." And I said, "Right." He said, "Well, you know, I back your predictions and I put money on them." And I said, "Look, I'm not being funny." His name was Colin. I said, "I'm not being funny, Colin. If I could predict the results of Premier League football matches, do you think I would be Aston Villa on a cold Tuesday in February?" I said, "I'd be on my yacht in the Bahamas, but hey, all good fun."
Yeah. How are you finding this run of fixtures at the moment where we've been talking about this? It's just every night.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy it? Are you sitting down watching them all?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I think you really can see too much football. Most definitely. And I just tend to now is like, you know, just pick up the highlights with most of them. And it's not the same, as we know, and everybody keeps talking about it. But it just so isn't the same. Even, you know, the Burnley game last week, I said at Anfield, it's just very, very strange, the whole kind of thing. And you kind of sat there, and I think, and you're kind of asking yourself, you know, should we really be playing sort of one of those things? Because obviously then there was quite a few guys going out with COVID and stuff, but it seems to settle down. So, I mean, it is good that they're still playing and everything, but it just doesn't seem, well, it's not the same, is it? We know it's not the same. That's obviously stating the bleeding obvious.
Yeah. Well, listen, if you're not watching the matches, Mark, it must mean you're watching something else, which gives us an opportunity. I haven't even teed you up for this. For Mark Lawrenson's movie reviews. Do we have the music? We have the music even ready.
Well, listen.
We come back to Liverpool. They're still 3-1 up. If that happens, we'll come back to that in a minute.
Yeah.
What are you watching?
Nothing. Nothing. Seriously, I mean, I think I've been through everything with Netflix. Absolutely everything. I watched Queen's Gambit.
Oh yeah,
which was, I thought was good.
It was great.
My son said to me, "Dad, you should watch that." And I'm going, "What is it about?" He said, "It's about chess."
Mm.
I said, "Ah, really?" No, I enjoyed it. But apart from that, I went back and watched Designated Survivor.
Haven't seen it. Heard good reviews.
Good. It's good. But honestly, I go on Netflix every day, Nathan, and I'm like, right, what's new today? What can I watch? But I'll tell you what I did watch last week, actually, me and my lad, we watched Godfather 2.
Oh, yes. Jeez, I haven't seen it in about 20 years.
Oh, honestly.
Still is good.
Oh, fabulous. I mean, you know, very, very rarely do you get a sequel that's better than the first one. And it's just brilliant. Pacino and De Niro and stuff. And everybody, I kind of sat there, and it's nearly 3 hours in it, and it went back. It felt like it went past me in about 10 minutes. It was fab.
Might do that over the weekend now. I have. What you need to do is you need to expand from Netflix. So I got Apple Plus.
Right.
I got it for free for a year on my phone. They've got this thing, Ted Lasso. You'd love it, Mark.
Oh,
it's an American who comes over to manage in the Premier League.
Oh, okay.
It sounds like the worst idea of all time. Americans writing football comedy. But it actually works.
Right, I'll have a look at that.
So that'll keep you going. They're quite short. What about Schitt's Creek? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very short, them episodes is the problem.
What?
They're very short. They're only about 20 minutes, so.
Yeah.
They don't get you through very much.
Yeah, and I think something, I do think with a lot of these is, and they've done the first series and everyone's going, wow, this is fab. But as the series go on, they kind of drag the storyline out, don't they?
Mm.
You know, obviously someone said to them, oh, this is brilliant, but, you know, the big boss man upstairs has gone, yeah, well, let's have another 40 episodes and let's get some more dough. But hey, it's all good. I'm reading a book about Tiger Woods at the moment, which is really, really interesting, and talking about stuff like, if you remember when he went through, obviously, his real bad time and all those kind of things, and when he came back, his body had completely changed. And there's a serious hint in this book about, you know, how did he change his body?
Yeah.
So you can imagine.
That question comes up a lot when you look at some of the people he's worked with over the years. But
yeah.
There's a couple of Tiger books out at the moment. We've just been there's a documentary of Tiger on Sky Atlantic at the moment, which is based, I think, on a different book, which goes into his past and his relationship with his father. and all of that. That is the book is well worth reading, and the documentary isn't quite as good. It's we were saying pretty salacious stuff. It goes into the scandal in a lot of detail, but the more Tiger Woods you can get, the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still Spurs 1, Liverpool 3, four minutes left. I did want to talk to you as well about West Ham and your old mate David Moyes, who has been through the ringer over the last 6 or 7 years since he went to Manchester United and went in with such a high reputation, and has really been struggling and battling to get that reputation back, and has come in at West Ham this season, and they've just been a revelation for a club that has been a total basket case at times in recent years. He's brought a bit of structure. They seem to have made really strong signings, different types of signings, with the likes of Soucek and Soufal coming in, who aren't the most glamorous names for a club like West Ham, but are really good, solid players. And he looks as though he's actually back enjoying himself again.
He is. He likes it. You know, and he was a bit scarred by Manchester United. But as he said, basically on the first day he took over, I mean, Rio Ferdinand's legs had gone, hadn't they? So he was obviously coming to the end. Who was the left back they had? Patrick Evra? Patrice Evra, I should
Patrice
say.
Patrice Evra, yeah.
And he'd agreed a deal with the club that he was leaving at the end of the season. So was a big, rough, tough centre-back that played alongside Rio.
Vidic.
Yeah. And he's basically said that, you know, the three of them come knocked on the door and said, you know, hi, nice to meet you, but we're off. So, and he's a... He would be one of life's warriors, would
right.
Moisey. You know, you go for a beer with him, and you just say to him, matter of fact, what do you want? And he said, what are you having? And I go, what the hell does it matter what I'm having? What do you want? He said, not sure. He said, that's what we call him. I'm not sure all the time. But listen, if you get him at your club and let him build, and he builds from back to front, and he gets it right. I mean, he did a fabulous job at Everton. When you think, improved all the players, made them absolute fortunes with the sales, etc. And he's just very, very trustworthy. And, you know, he likes it there. And I said, well, the big bonus, I said, it doesn't make any difference whether you've got crowds or not, because there's absolutely no atmosphere in that stadium when it's got 50,000 people in. But I think his two centre-backs have been brilliant for him, and that's where he's kind of built from there, and Rice, Declan Rice, etc., is going to be a top player if he's not already. The boy signed from Hull City has done fabulous, because I saw him quite a few times at Hull in the Championship, and he played kind of more through the middle, and Moyes had him playing wide on the right, and you said about Soucek as well, who was one of his signings. He just seems to be, you know, such a hard-working lad. He suddenly started scoring all sorts of goals for them. I think his only problem, Moisey, will be that Antonio is probably his best striker, but he sort of gets quite a few injuries. He's a big, muscular guy, isn't he? He seems to get quite a few muscle injuries. He's got the kid he signed. Is it Barama who's officially signed now, hasn't he? Because they had him on loan with agreement. And has Jesse Lingard gone today?
Yeah, he's gone today, on loan for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I don't think he'll chuck him straight in the team, but I think he'll probably get him up and running. He might, for 3 or 4 months, be an outstanding signing, although $1.5 million loan fee, and he's only there for 4 months, plus you're paying all his wages, so some deal Man United have done.
Yeah, certainly is. That'll be interesting to see what happens. And West Ham against Liverpool is on Sunday. It's going to be our live game here on Off the Ball. Mark, great stuff. Looks as though Liverpool are going to get the job done. 3-1 up into the final seconds of that game at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. We'll talk to you soon.
Cheers, bud.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.